So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, electrify the steel cage.
Let's have a steel cage match. Electrify.
10,000 volts of violence.
One of the most brutal concept matches in TNA.
10,000 volts of violence.
Electrified cage match.
In the electrified cage, once we hook up the electricity, the voltage will permanently scar you or knock you unconscious.
Shock.
10,000 volts of violence.
I understand that at different times there's alternating currents of electricity. There's different levels at different times, the ebb and the flow.
It's Team 3D versus LAX in an electrified cage match for the NWA World Tag Team titles. And only one thing is certain. Fear, pain, and suffering will be felt by all.
This job sucks.
I got permission to put your mama in a headlock.
What?
She tried to shoot me in a bigger bow leg lock.
Oh.
She said she liked the way I stick and make the bed rock. Or how I lick and leave her twisted like a dreadlock.
Woo!
And it's on, so stop the sweating like a wristband.
Ah.
And get some balance like a bike without the kickstand. I think I changed the definition of a hitman.
I got my corner on lockdown. I'm about to hold this whole block down. To the Chris, tell him how to stop now.
Hello and welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock, reporting from Montreal, and joining me right now via Skype from Toronto. Way, are you there?
Hey, John, I'm here.
Oh, damn it. The connection's a little off. Can you repeat that?
Yes.
How are you? In light of everything that happened on...
That's tough. This is...
No,
I'm good. I'm good.
We're live, pal.
Yeah. Oh, the connection's way better now, all of a sudden.
You know, on Monday night, during Review of Raw, some allegations came out regarding you. I know you probably don't want to comment on them, but...
What are you talking about?
Allegations. Let's not play dumb.
What the hell are you talking about?
It's quite the video we received.
Video?
This is quite the scandal amongst our universe of listeners.
Really? Okay. It's about me?
You're really just in denial, aren't you, about this?
I mean, it must have been so traumatic, I must have blocked it out.
I was stunned. I was stunned when this was brought to my attention.
Wow.
Give
me a hint. I must have suffered some post-traumatic stress.
I guess. Maybe you were on a lot of substances. I don't know.
Really? Okay.
I don't really want to get into it. This isn't the time or the place. I think this is a private matter that you're going to have to address. And I'm hoping just over the years that the listeners can all come to grips over it.
Like drugs? Some type of drug thing?
Holy Christ.
Interesting. Okay.
But it's quite the cliffhanger you left us with.
Cliffs. Cliffs. Was I on a cliff somewhere?
Well, I don't know. But
cliffhanger.
I think people's love for you maybe fell off a cliff after hearing this news.
Hmm. I don't even...
Well, maybe you should go back. You should go download Review of Raw at liveaudiowrestling.com, or you should watch the televised version, which features said video, at youtube.com/fightnetwork, so that everyone's up to speed, including Wei, who's going to have to go back and watch this and download it, both.
I will do that right now.
Okay. Well, don't do it this minute because we've got a review to chat about. How are you doing otherwise in light of all of this?
I'm doing fine. I think so. I mean, you always ask me, but I always forget to ask you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
What's new in your life? What's your new thing?
You know what's sad is I don't have a new thing now that Daredevil's done.
Hmm.
Oh, boy.
That was the new thing.
That was the new thing.
For a week.
For a week. And there's no more. Do you realize they haven't even apparently renewed it for a second season yet? I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Do you think a season two is going to happen, or they're just going to wait until all the series, and then they're going to do the mixing of everyone rather than a season two?
Pretty sure that's the plan.
Yeah, so maybe a season two isn't just a... Everyone shouldn't be expecting it necessarily.
I think it'll happen eventually, but it won't happen
years
for a while.
Potentially down the road.
Yeah.
So they've got another two series?
They've got three.
Three!
They've got three new characters to debut, and then they have the Defenders, which is sort of like the version of their version of the Avengers where they'll all be together. So you really have four series in between.
Are you looking forward to any of the movies that are coming out, Fantastic Four and Avengers?
The Avengers, for sure. Absolutely. I think any of the Marvel independently produced properties are, they've always done really well with them. So the Avengers, for sure. I saw the Fantastic Four trailer. Looked pretty good.
Is it fantastic?
I wouldn't say that. No. I wouldn't say so. I mean...
Is this a reboot? Because they came out with a Fantastic Four years ago, correct?
It is a reboot.
Of course.
And yeah, well,
what
I mean,
would these franchises be without reboots every year?
Well, the thing is, I think a lot of these are just, they're just doing these movies so that they can retain the properties, the rights to these properties. That's why you had like a new Spider-Man every 3 years.
They should just do reboots. Like, they should never even get into sequels.
Sure.
And they would still do like hundreds of millions of dollars, I bet. Every 4 years, you just do a reboot again. We're going to tell you the exact same story and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah. Yes and no. I think at some point people, you know, get sick of the origin stories, you know?
Dan Lavransky is not happy about all the proliferation of origin stories.
For what?
For everything.
For all these comic book things?
Yes. He thinks the origin stories are unnecessary. Mm. I understand the logic that you're trying to appeal to the non-fan and give them a jumping on point. But at the same time, you know, for someone like you, you've probably... Yeah. You understand who these people are.
Well, like Spider-Man, for instance. I mean, they're rebooting Spider-Man again, this time with Marvel producing it. And they've pretty much said that they're going to do away with the origin, and they're going to expect that everybody who's watching this movie already knows how Spider-Man got his powers. And so they're just going to kind of carry on from that. And I prefer that.
You're not done Daredevil yet, correct?
No, I'm not. I'm still on episode 10.
So you wanted to...
I'm probably.
You were telling me you didn't want to rush through this. You wanted to really savor this series.
Yeah, and I was just kind of busy this weekend. But I mean, I started it, and then I would start an episode, but then I'd be so tired that I would fall asleep, and I'd
really.
I'm just tired. I mean,
you
I'm just. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You need some coffee.
I did.
Wade just spilt his coffee all over. He almost destroyed our boom closet.
Yeah. But aside from that, what else is going on with you?
Well, I pulled it up here because I want to share with this. I was bored over the weekend, and I was looking something up, and I ended up on our Live Audio Wrestling Wikipedia page.
Oh, you're Googling?
This is a thing of beauty.
Googling yourself?
Well, I ended up... I haven't looked at this in a while. I don't know who maintains this, but they know more about our shows than we do.
Yeah.
Like, some of the detail... I'm going to read this, okay? This is about our Review Raw TV version, okay? Listen to the detail of this. As announced during a live Review Away podcast held immediately prior to WrestleMania 31, the Review Raw name expanded to also encompass a television series broadcast on Fight Network with John Pollock and Wei Ting as co-hosts. The televised version of Review Raw is effectively a televised recording session of the podcast with the actual WWE Raw review content identical in both versions. However, some segments have been modified to suit the television audience, such as the omission of listener feedback and a shorter banter portion at the start of the show, but more directly relates to the co-host's positions at Fight Network. As both the podcast and televised shows are produced in the same setting, there may be segments omitted from the televised portion. A selection of segments from the podcast version may be, at their discretion, posted to the Fight Network's YouTube page as Review Raw Extra. The first Review Raw Extra segment was dedicated to a contest selecting the televised series theme music. I mean, I read this and I'm like, man, this is a pretty regimented show. I mean, they have almost like a Bible of like where everything goes, the structure of it. It's really incredible. It's very humbling.
Oh, it's great because now I know what to do, how to do these things. Because I mean, I wouldn't have known otherwise.
The creepiest description though is this, which I don't know where this came up from. Bauer and Pollock is a co-production between Live Audio Wrestling and Major League Wrestling, where John Pollock and Court Bauer discuss the business of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. The idea first spawned from wanting to record private conversations between the two on general news topics following Bauer's appearance on Review Away, as was referred to as a, quote, secret project for some weeks prior to its first episode on May 31st, 2013.
What is that? Is there any truth to that?
I can honestly tell you that we have never... We were never talking to one another and saying, you know what? These phone conversations are so great. Let's do a podcast. But hey, sure.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see a source for that. But either way, I feel like, well, thank you, whoever.
I don't care. This is incredible detail. I'm learning stuff about these shows as I look at this. They've got all our shows listed, all of our history.
Wow.
I will say, if someone wants to go the extra mile and update the awards, that would be great. They kind of cut off at 2012. We've even got tables here for all the picks, including the 1 year Wei Ting provided his picks. you've done them since, though, since 2012.
Done them a couple times. I think it's amazing. So thank you, whoever...
I just want to see them updated for my own curiosity of what we picked.
Listen, and they don't even have to be truthful. Like, just bullshit. And then just take your best guess. That's fine. That's okay. That's what Wikipedia is for. Take your best guess.
Well, I'm very impressed with all of this. Guest reviewers on here.
The whole thing about, like, Review and Impact.
Oh, man. There's even a genesis of Review and Impact.
There's even a Review, a SmackDown biography.
Unlike Review or Raw and Review and Impact, not every live episode of SmackDown will be reviewed. The decision to have a Review of SmackDown show is decided on a show-by-show basis.
Oh, my God. What else? What else we got?
Ask Away video podcast, which was very short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
The Ask Away name would later be reused for a video podcast series featuring John and Wei in late 2011. Oh, you know what the best one was? Oh, this was so good. I completely forgot about this. One second here. I need to find this. Okay. This is for Review Away. The two primarily review older wrestling pay-per-view events from the mid to late 1990s, but have since branched out to other media relating to wrestling and MMA. Notably, in a homage to an early Ask Away episode where John and Wei reviewed a wrestling-related pornographic film. The second and third anniversary shows had John and Wei review a wrestling-related pornographic film. The visible discomfort of Wei reviewing the film has led them to discontinue reviewing wrestling-related pornographic films. Reviews of classic events often contain audio clips from the shows they're reviewing. Okay, blah, blah, blah.
That's all factual.
I love that it's also a pornographic film.
Yeah.
That's how you should always refer to adult film. A pornographic film.
Well, on a Wikipedia, you're supposed to sound somewhat, you know, official.
This sounds very official.
Yeah.
Like, I feel this is, like, written in some textbook out there for podcasting.
Maybe this was written by some media professional.
Well, whoever's doing this, great job.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm looking at the links, at the references here. It's just, you know, Twitter, some articles on us. It's great. You should have your own Wikipedia page, Wei. You can do those now where you fill out, like, a survey and they'll make a mock Wikipedia page for you, like a graphic.
Oh, on off of Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting sick of them already.
What would yours say?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't done the survey.
John Pollock is a Canadian former rapper turned
No, that would be a factual Wikipedia page, Wei.
Oh. Cool.
All right. I don't have time for this any longer. Are you excited for this review? I know you're not.
I am.
You're excited that it's done.
No. Well, I'm excited for it. Of course I am.
I have many thoughts on this show, as a TNA pay-per-view from 2007 is likely to provide. The first of which, did you watch this on TNA Impact Plus YouTube?
Yes, I did.
Why is this thing never mentioned? Like, I didn't even know this existed until last week when we were looking this up.
We'll explain what it is.
Okay. TNA Impact Plus is their YouTube where you pay $4.99 a month and you get every pay-per-view in their history. I guess every DVD release they've also provided. Like, pretty much everything other than the episodes of Impact.
It's the TNA network.
It's the TNA network. To show what a priority this is, the banner ad features Sting, Hulk Hogan, and Jeff Hardy as your featured talent. And you can sign up for a free trial for 2 weeks. I feel like I'm shilling. I'm definitely not getting anything for this. I don't understand how this is not promoted. Like, this is something. Okay, it's something that maybe a handful of diehard TNA fans will subscribe to and let it lapse, and you get $5 a month out of them.
The fact that, you know, that graphic hasn't been updated in a long time suggests that this is probably a side project of the companies that they haven't paid much attention to nor updated maybe in a while. The other thing is...
Every single Impact, they have a lower third come up promoting Dixie Carter's Twitter. Every single Impact.
Right.
How this couldn't get even that minimal treatment, I don't understand.
My other question is, how much interest is there in the TNA back catalog?
Well, I'll tell you that much. When I got the WWE Network, I mean, there was just loads of stuff I wanted to go back and watch. When I got New Japan World, I was just, man, there are so many matches I want to go back and watch. I got this free trial, and I watched Lockdown. And outside of a curiosity to go back and watch that three-way at Unbreakable a number of years back in 2005, the Joe Daniel Styles three-way, mm-hmm. which may be the most famous match in TNA history. I mean, there was just – Lockdown was a perfect example of just – you could watch Lockdown. You could watch Sacrifice 2008. You could watch Slammiversary 2006. These shows, they lack any kind of – characteristics that separate them from any other pay-per-view they've done. To me, there so many of them blend together.
Because they all look the same, too.
They look the same. It's multiple-person X-Division matches on every single show. It's stipulation matches. Like, WWE, I can isolate event by event by event. Mm-hmm. TNA, I have a real hard time doing that and picking out... You know, they have quality matches. I'm sure you go back to their library. I'm sure there's some great matches because I've watched them all. But... there's something that lacks when it comes to how they've treated their library, even when you compare it to Ring of Honor, of what they've done in terms of just branding their own history and making these matches historical, important. Mm-hmm. You never hear in TNA where they talk about the great match from X or reflecting on their own history. I mean, that's something TNA really doesn't do a whole lot. It's always look forward and never looking back and never taking a good match and putting it on a pedestal so it's an incredible match. I think that's something that they failed at.
Yeah, well, with that said, do you think that there's value in a service like this?
I think that it's... Listen, I'm sure that they... I don't recall this ever being promoted by TNA. I don't recall this ever being announced, much less some big launch to at least test where there's interest. There are diehard TNA fans out there. I think their television on Spike was proof of that, that no matter where that show went, you could count on those million viewers. And if you could get 5% of those million viewers to sign up for something like this, that's a significant revenue stream for a company that is not – it doesn't have a huge dearth of revenue streams at this point. They're not –
dearth.
Dearth.
Love it.
I love that word. Nice. New word for me right now. But – I mean, they're not doing a whole lot of house shows at the moment. Pay-per-views are kind of on standstill.
Right.
I mean, I would just be looking at any little thing that could provide some revenue for us. Great. Let's at least promote it hard and at least find out that there's not an audience rather than not even try. Because I think there would be some people that just – they need to have something like this.
Well, didn't you say that how, you know, recently on the Fight Network we've been airing TNA what is that show called?
Greatest Matches.
Greatest Matches. And that actually does really well for us.
It did. I got the first or second week's number for Greatest Matches. It was tremendous. Like, they did really well.
Does it do better than the Impact itself?
I don't know. I think on the 1 week that I looked at, I think it was above Impact. But, I mean, there is – you watch the Greatest Matches. It features a lot of pay-per-view matches where they're in front of bigger crowds than the Impact Zone.
And big names, too. You know, you got obviously, you know, guys that are no longer on the roster that you'll still see on a lot of those classic matches.
And it looks great. The TNA production looks great.
Yeah.
It's – something I've really noticed with the WWE Network that we've observed by just they have it on in the lobby is that you walk by, it grabs your attention. And I think TNA is very similar. I think pro wrestling...
it's just colorful. You know?
These characters to just come out of the screen is something that pro wrestling, it's a great... when you have great production for a pro wrestling show, it really does pull people in. And I'm certain that that's something to do with, you know, just... casual interest in some of these wrestling programs. But TNA Lockdown is what we're reviewing today from Sunday, April the 15th of 2007 in St. Charles, Missouri, which for the purposes of this show was just listed as St. Louis, which is Kind of true. Very close to one another, but why not?
Close enough.
At the Family Arena.
Ooh.
The Family Arena.
Okay.
Featuring an electrified fence match where the Americans were going to try and beat up the immigrants.
It's family-like.
That was the storyline. This was a time period where TNA was certainly going through some issues, I will say, to get everyone's timeline. To me, the most key portion of TNA's history was that fall of 2006, where not only did they bring back Vince Russo to oversee creative, but that was when they got Kurt Angle. Mm-hmm. And that was a key directional change in the company. You had this massive hiring in Kurt Angle, where it was a lot of focus was on TNA. Angle was a legitimate star coming to TNA. At the same time, Vince Russo was installed in power, and I think that you saw that version of television that Vince Russo produced, and you saw this was a perfect example of this show where you had quality talent who Vince Russo had ideas for, and it wasn't just Russo. It was there was a creative staff at this point in place at TNA, but trying to take a lot of these good quote-unquote workers and fit them into characters that were either some of them were a stretch and some of them did work.
Yeah.
I think you saw the whole gamut on this show. Mm-hmm. They always had these incredible videos to start these shows, the David Sahadi productions. And this one was about a video about prisms. And
prisons.
Oh, I wrote prisms.
No.
Prisons. That makes a lot more sense here with the cage motif. Which housed the dark souls of society. Stating that man has been prisoner. Yeah, why the fuck did I think prisoner? I wrote prisoner here. Man has been prisoner of something darker and more crippling. His own self. His fears. Loathing. And a warden choking his own dying dreams.
Oh,
this
man.
Was this is deep shit for a wrestling pay-per-view.
It feels like I'm listening to poetry here. And I mean, I've always loved these. They feel, and they remind me of a lot of WWE from the late 90s, too. A lot of these openings.
Well, it was David Sahadi,
the same person.
Kind of your creative director.
That very distinctive style, but I think the way they write, it's actually very over the top, but I think it's very good.
And says, tonight, pain is guaranteed. And in a line that I am not, this was verbatim what was said. Fear, pain, and suffering will be felt by all. So that's what you have in store for your $29.95
awesome.
Tonight. I believe you would have watched this show back in the day.
I might have.
During your law call screening years.
I don't remember anything from that time.
Man, you don't have long-term memory, and based on that video Monday night, no short-term memory either.
I'm just a blank slate every single day.
Well, that can be beneficial. I can be the one that goes back and remembers stuff, and you're reviewing it with fresh eyes, even if you've watched it. We'll review this next week as well.
Okay.
See how your opinions change.
It's like that Adam Sandler movie. It's like 50 First Dates, except...
yeah, exactly, like 50 First Dates.
Reviews.
Yes. What did you like about, or not like, about Mike Tenay and Don West as the announced team?
It's been my same criticism of this team. I mean, especially comparing to some of the tandems that we get today, I actually think they're very good. You know, they deliver a high level of energy, and they both seem incredibly enthused. And, I mean, Tenay, you know, you don't get many people that are more knowledgeable than Mike Tenay. And Don West, I think, you know, considering his background, he does a really good job, too. My problem, though, is just an overabundance of energy between the two.
It was tough for them to dial it back at times. I mean, that was Don West's calling card. I always enjoyed Don West because whatever you want to say about his experience as a color commentator, he really found his own voice. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, here was a guy that you believed was the biggest fan of TNA in the world.
That is true. And you can definitely tell that, like, the guy tries really hard.
Of course.
He works really hard, does his research, you know, does his best to put over the talent, not himself. And in that respect, you really have to, you know, commend them. But I would just say that the energy is so high that it often feels insincere. It doesn't feel like it's an actual... Nor, you know, they're also never critical. And never critical of, you know, each other's conversation, but they're never critical of, you know, what's happening in the ring either. And from an analyst, if this was a real sport, you need something like that. You don't just want somebody who is constantly trying to, you know, put over or aid what they're seeing.
Letitia was our backstage announcer, or backstage interviewer with Jay Lethal to start off the show, and this was where he was morphed into the Black Machismo character, which worked great for him, and it's been really something to see as he's evolved out of that character, because when he came to Ring of Honor, I mean, he was really in that role, much like Eric Young, where comedy was so much a part of him, but he has completely shedded that now in Ring of Honor. He's become such a great performer in ROH, but this was something that on the surface felt like something that should have lasted a week, and he was really good as Black Machismo character. Mm-hmm. I mean, did the voice, the mannerisms, it was excellent.
There are a lot of subtleties too, like here calling Letitia Liz, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of really small things, and he was fantastic at it. But I mean, something like this you can only take for so long before you have to evolve.
Well, then he became Ric Flair.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it was something that even the best performer, and I would say Jay Lethal was the best guy that could pull something like this off, and he got a few years out of this. Mm-hmm. There's a shelf life to that, and yeah. I'm happy to see the guy has progressed out of that. He's a super effective heel in Ring of Honor at the moment. So we open up the show with an Escape the Cage match for the X Division title, with Chris Sabin defending the title against Jay Lethal, Shark Boy, Sanjay Dutt, and Alex Shelley. This was the weirdest cage I have seen, where it wasn't even bars or fencing. It was cables.
Yeah, it was. It seemed like a bunch of wires.
With like a plastic coating over the cable.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it looks like it would have maybe a little less give than a chain link fence, but it has probably larger spaces for you to climb.
And wouldn't hurt. You would think you're running into like plastic, essentially.
I don't know about plastic.
They had the plastic like metal covering on
it. They still look like metal wires.
Well, whatever.
This was supposed to be an electrified fence.
Well, it was going to be. They had to plug in the big voltage fucking thing.
A fence you could run a current through.
Wait, we might spend an hour talking about the electrified fence match.
That really is the main event.
It is. That should have ended the show.
Yeah.
In many ways, it did. Kevin Nash is out with Jay Lethal wearing a St. Louis Cardinals jersey, and Tanay plugs that members of the Cardinals are in attendance. There was a great start involving Sabin and Dutt having a great sequence. Shark Boy blind tagged in, hit a sunset flip powerbomb to Sabin, and then a superplex to Dutt. Sabin and Shelley, this was fun to watch them, because this was the beginning of what would eventually grow into the Motor City Machine Guns, where these two worked together in tandem against other members of the X Division, and just some awesome double team spots, really crisp sequences with all of them. Mm-hmm. And you could see that chemistry of the two coming up together and having that instant chemistry here. There was a diamond dust by Shark Boy, which got countered into an inverted DDT by Shelley. And then there was a double leg drop off the top by both Shelley and Sabin to Shark Boy. So he was the first elimination. Then Black Machismo, who got over tremendously well in the arena, he was in the match. There was a springboard clothesline by Dutt as he slips, but then hit Shelley and kind of saved the maneuver. Then Sabin blocked a Hurricane Rana to Dutt to hit the cradle shock, eliminating him. Then there was a lethal combination to both Sabin and Shelley. He hit the top rope elbow drop to Shelley, eliminating him. So it's down to Sabin and Machismo, and the first guy to escape the cage would win the match. So the referee exits the ring because he doesn't need to be in there at that point. They battled on top of the cage, and then Sabin just kicks Lethal's leg, and Lethal gets caught upside down on the cage with his leg in the cage area, and Sabin just jumps to the floor. It kind of just came out of nowhere, and Sabin wins at 15:49, because it wasn't really a long final series with Sabin and Machismo. They just kind of went right to the finish.
Yeah, yeah. But in that sense, it's somewhat realistic, you know. The goal is to just climb out and get out of there, right? But I thought a very good match, you know, good X Division match, great double team moves, great flow and great finesse and great technique exhibited by all these guys. In particular, I'm always impressed by Sanjay Dutt, and I don't think he gets enough, you know, praise, just as somebody who just moves around so well.
Jeremy Borash is backstage with Team Cage. We were going to have a Lethal Lockdown main event with Team Cage, with Christian Cage, who is the current NWA champion. Everyone's yelling. Cage says that this team is his family, except for Abyss, who's an imbecile, as they look at Abyss in the background. And they call him an idiot after he gets upset. They note how Team Angle arrived in separate cars, but they all arrived together in a Camry. And says how Team Angle has a traitor on their team in Jeff Jarrett. And Cage says if any of his teammates get the winning fall, then they will get a future TNA title shot, And Steiner gets upset for Christian saying that it feels like Christmas morning because Christmas is 8 months away. And then he starts yelling at Tomko, and it ends with Father Jim Mitchell explaining that if AJ Styles were to get the title shot, that Viz's mother will go to prison. And then realizes he wants the mother to go to prison, and he walks off calling Abyss an idiot. If ever there was a three-minute promo that better encapsulated TNA creative, it was this backstage segment. Did you get all that? If AJ Styles gets the title shot, somehow Abyss's mother is going to prison.
No, I didn't really make that connection.
This was, we would get the visual later of seeing Jim Mitchell bring Abyss's mother into the impact zone. This was the fun storyline where it would be revealed that Abyss, I believe, shot his father in the back of the head.
Oh,
and his mother was holding this over Abyss's head.
Oh, boy. It's almost like the Kingpin.
Yeah. It's like really like Kingpin.
Hmm.
Though I wasn't as encapsulated by this storyline. Maybe Abyss just needed a white painting.
Yes.
So they then have a video on Tracy Brooks and her screwing of Eric Young.
Ooh.
This was a creative staff that loved their double entendres. Mm-hmm. Sometimes triple entendres. So Tracy Young screwed Eric Young into
Brooks.
Signing...
Tracy Brooks.
Who did I say?
Tracy Young.
Oh, Tracy Young. I'm sorry. That was what Eric was hoping for.
Yeah.
Eric Young ended up signing away his rights to Robert Roode, Inc. And Tracy's catchphrase was, "You just got screwed by Ms. Brooks." And Young is not allowed to hit Roode because Roode employs him. And then Petey Williams shows up to the aid of Eric Young. And there had been a secret friend of Eric Young's that we were led to believe was Petey Williams.
Yes, okay.
So the feud is Roode and then Eric Young, which I then wrote on my notes, Robert Roode versus Eric Young is next. No, it was Robert Roode against Petey Williams.
Who's fighting to free his friend, who's a slave now. To
yeah, slave storyline.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this is how contracts work in these days in TNA. Williams slips on the second rope. Recovers, hits a code breaker to Roode. They show Hector Guerrero and Willie Urbina calling the action in Spanish at this empty portion of the arena. Then the Roode is just beating down Williams. Beating him down forever here. There's a knee drop off the second turnbuckle. Constant cutaways to Tracy, who is having her own match with her top to stay in it. There was a Uranagi to Williams for a two count, and then Tracy pulls out a hockey stick from under the ring, and Eric Young pulls it away from Roode during a tug-of-war spot, and Tracy begins yelling at EY, which I thought for sure was going to get a hooking joke from the announcers, but yeah. Not quite. There was a drop kick to the back of Roode that didn't connect, so Roode didn't bother to sell it. Williams then got a pair of near falls, including one from a tornado DDT, and then Petey wants the hockey stick. EY knocks Tracy down to the ground and passes the hockey stick to Petey, who then attacks Roode with with the hockey stick. And that's where we got, that's high sticking right there. A Mike Tenay classic. The crowd boos as Earl Hebner removes the hockey stick, and then Roode gets sent into the cage. Yes, remember, all of this interference is happening during a cage match. He goes to set up the Canadian Destroyer, but Roode blocks it, sends him into the turnbuckle, and hits a fisherman suplex called the payoff, and pins Petey at 10 minutes and 14 seconds. And then Roode shoves Young afterwards right on the ramp and walks by him. I never want to have to call a grown man Petey again in my life.
Petey.
He is Peter from now on.
A lot of these storylines, I just...
There was so much to them.
I just don't...
This is the second goddamn match of the show, and there was... God, I was like doing backgrounds on contract law.
Man, I just don't remember any of these. Like, they're just so you can always count on the wrestling between any of these people. You know, any of them in the ring, you put them together, and I think they're a lot of them will just have very good matches. But these storylines are just, I just think they're bad. I just think they're really stupid.
You know, there was always the point counterpoint of Vince Russo in the late 90s was that, well, everybody on the show had a storyline. And yet, in theory, great. But sometimes, like for this complicated things way too much for me.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, there was so much going on. And especially, maybe that's another thing. You go back to some of these shows. If you were not watching Impact at the time, where those were pretty loaded shows when it came to how much detail was put into these shows and how many angles they were shooting. I mean, you just watch a snapshot, the pay-per-view. It's like, what is going on in some of these feuds?
Mm.
Because there's so much going on.
Mm.
We go back to Letitia, or Liz, with Kurt Angle, who is confronting Rhino in the locker room, who is part of Team Angle. They just simply ignore the microphone that has been put in between them during this confrontation. And Jarrett has messed up their numbers advantage for the Lethal Lockdown tonight. Rhino is pissed that Kurt Angle trusts Jeff Jarrett. And we go then to the video for our Knockouts steel cage match between Gail Kim and Miss Jackie Moore, which featured Jackie referring to Gail Kim, calling her a no-good slut.
Oh.
Really, really showcasing your hand of your who's running creative at this point. And then this dramatic music after that quote. It was, you no-good slut, and then you got this, like, super campy music right after it.
It's a six sides of steel catfight. Gail Kim takes on the pride of Tennessee, Miss Jackie Moore, next.
Jackie Moore and Gail Kim. They fought on the ramp before the bell rung, and then it rings as they're fighting outside. Novel way to start a cage match. Kim gets thrown into Mike Tenay and Don West, and then Jackie pours water all over Gail Kim. And then they brawl cage side, where there's a sign in the front row that read, "Women shouldn't wrestle because they can't."
Oh.
Held up by a female.
Oh my God, really?
Yes. They get into the cage where the actual match begins. Jackie has the advantage. She applies this waist lock from behind, and then they awkwardly run into the turnbuckle. It looked like both kind of like knocked themselves out. And then Gail Kim recovered, got to the top, hit a missile drop kick. They battle with elbows near the door, and then Kim crashes the door into Jackie, shuts the door, climbs to the top of the cage, and then hits a cross body, nearly overshooting Jackie, and pins her at 7 minutes 14 seconds. This is usually my pet peeve of cage matches. But in this case, she could get the win inside of the match. And therefore, she took this big risk where, yes, she could have exited the cage, but she can also pin her. So it wasn't as illogical as some of the WWE examples we get when they do this spot.
It's like in a UFC fight when somebody decides to go for the knockout instead of laying and praying for a decision.
Yes.
And there's an easy way out, and then there's a flashy way out.
They're taking a calculated risk, but one that does have a foreseeable reward at the end of it.
I mean, you know, there's all this talk about this Give Divas a Chance movement right now, and you're starting to see a bit of a resurgence in women's pro wrestling, at least when it comes to NXT. But, I mean, you know, Gail was working a very high level, you know, in this era of TNA, and I think a lot of people forget that. You know, she was excellent. Not necessarily this match in particular, but you could just see, just watching her, what a high level she was.
And this predated the Knockouts division being created in TNA. So Gail Kim was in this spot where, you know, very talented performer, but they had not built a women's division at this point in TNA. And this was kind of the building blocks of it that they'd bring in Kong, they'd bring in the beautiful people later on in the year. And that was something, I mean, say what you will, that was a great addition in 2007 in TNA. And it really was one of the defining factors with TNA from 2007 onwards. Backstage, Jeremy Borash is with Bob Backlund, who's going to be the special referee for the Senshi Austin Star match. And he says there is something synergistic with the plebeians going on. It was your typical wacky Bob Backlund promo, who was we got to meet during WrestleMania. You remember this?
Yeah, they paraded him around in the press box during WrestleMania.
Every year at WrestleMania, they get one of the legends to just come into the press box and shake hands with every media member.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they feel the need to do this. I mean, it's a nice gesture.
I don't know. I just think it's something they do for the press, you know, just to make sure they get everybody has a good time and they write favorable reviews, perhaps.
And Backlund was missing a tooth.
Oh, okay. Was he? He was definitely on.
Yeah, Wei didn't even turn around. He just he's like, give me a pop.
Well, what am I supposed to do? I'm not going to, you know, I'm not just going to mark out right there.
You should have applied the chicken wing on him. you should have offered him a chicken wing.
Yeah? Okay.
We'll move on.
But no, he was, he's very entertaining. He's always on.
So this match, Senshi and Austin Starr, two current TNA performers under different names currently, with Loki and Austin Aries.
Mm-hmm.
We had Senshi back before. They could call him Loki. I mean, we can't just give you your own name.
Well, they wanted to own his name, right?
Well, that didn't work out, I guess.
No.
And Austin Starr. What a contrast to the current Austin Aries. I mean, I think you could showcase an Austin Aries match from last week and show this Austin Starr, and I think you could reasonably convince someone, no, they're different people.
Perhaps. I mean, wrestling-wise, I don't think they were that
all. Oh, they wrestled the same, but there was certainly a very distinct difference.
This character, this Austin Starr character, was more of a comedic mid-card character. You know, he was the Fandango, you know, of the show. But Austin Aries is a main eventer.
Backlund is checking for any illegal closed fists early on as Starr is punching Senshi. There were chops from Senshi. Starr then got the advantage, hit his pendulum elbow drop. There was a power bomb off the ropes for a cover, and then he kicked out. Immediately, Starr applied a half crab, and Backlund then broke the hold after Senshi got to the ropes and Starr pulled him into the middle. So Backlund calling it right down the middle. Senshi then came back with a series of kicks. Back body drops Starr into the cage, and then a rolling capo kick by Senshi is delivered. Starr gets upset when Backlund stops Austin Starr from using the rope for leverage, and then Senshi hits a running drop kick. Starr then knocks Backlund into the turnbuckle, crotching Senshi, and then Starr hits a 450 splash for a near fall. He gets upset at Backlund for the slow count, and then Backlund gets upset, takes off his bow tie, and shoves Austin Starr into a pinning cradle by Senshi. And Senshi pins him at 9:57, and Starr just starts acting like a maniac into the camera and going off about Bob Backlund starting a war.
Ooh. It's so strange because, I mean, I think about this match between Loki and Aries, and I think, like, under a different context, like, it would be so much more memorable. It'd be so different, you know? Like, let's say even if these two went over to NXT and all of a sudden had a main event match on NXT, I think there'd be so much more attention put onto it. Just even a main event if they had, you know, right now on Impact, I think it'd be so much more, I don't know, for some reason, it's just funny to think about. It'd be so much more memorable and meaningful.
Austin Starr is one of many examples. You can add Christopher Daniels and his gimmick at this time. I mean, there was such, I think, a confusion of who they were trying to attract. It was, okay, we've got these hardcore wrestling fans that know who these people are from Ring of Honor, from other promotions. And I think there was a belief that, there's not many of those fans. They're going to watch regardless. We want to attract the people that are watching WWE. So we got to give these guys elaborate characters and give them these gimmicks that are probably going to turn off some fans that we know are watching our show, but it's being done to try and bring in a larger amount of fans who want to see over-the-top, outlandish characters. And you just saw so many of them here, with Black Machismo, with Austin Starr, with facial tattoos given to guys. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing, you know? If face a guy tats. Can't get over, it's because he doesn't have ink on his face. I never understood that, the facial tattoos. Maybe that's what you need.
Maybe we'll both get one.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We should, like, yeah, we'll be like the Usos.
Yeah, yeah, where if you put our faces together, it's like a, mm-hmm. it forms a third face.
My God.
So you get, like, half a nose on your cheek, and I'd get the other half.
Maybe I'll get your face tattooed on my face, and my face will be tattooed on yours, and nobody will be able to tell us apart.
Well, some people have watched our show and didn't realize I wasn't the Asian one.
Wow. Yeah. It's crazy. People that should be our Halloween idea.
I'll go as you, you go as me.
Yeah, dress up as
see, you would be funny, me, people will call it racist. This is how it works.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Borash is with Samoa Joe, and his sideburns also accompanied him to this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay to talk about Samoa Joe?
Oh, what do you mean? Why not? Because he ref'd my winning match at Grapple Kingdom 1 over Court Bauer.
Do you guys have a good relationship now?
Not necessarily. He's an unbiased referee. anything, he'd be more biased towards Corn.
So Joe screamed, and then he screamed louder, and then he would scream even more loud. The highlights being...
You scumbag, Jared! You think for 1 minute, you think for 1 minute you have me fooled! You see, for as much as I hate Kurt, for as much as I despise Kurt, you and me, we will never get along. We will never get along. And as for tonight, make your move, Jared. I know what's coming. I know what you want to do. I know what your plan is. And I beg you to cross that line. Come at me, because when you do, I will be there waiting. I will break you. I will maim you. I will kill you.
I will break you. I will maim you. I will kill you. Joe is an awesome performer, but this man certainly had... We talk about finding that voice, and the man had a flashlight and was in a cave at this point. Because these screaming promos were just too much.
He's very comfortable speaking. You know, he it's not like he's shy or timid or, like, not able to show his personality. He's able to do all that. For some reason, though, and this even goes back to ROH, seeing him cut promos like this, or he just shouts a lot, and it's not the most effective way. You know, I can't help but think it's not the most effective way for somebody of his character, this big, large, you know, bully, to speak. I don't know.
Yeah, this was also the phase.
Especially a baby face.
Yeah, and, you know, I always look at Joe where this was after Angle had come in, beat Joe, the streak was over. You were trying to get Joe now into the heavyweight mix and away from the X division. And this was a period where he really got... It was just really... He was a star to that TNA audience.
Oh, yeah.
And it really did fall apart over the next couple of years. And Joe just became a guy on the roster instead of the standout guy on the roster. And this was a key point for his career.
Even with the face tattoo.
Well, that was still to come.
Yeah.
The ninjas, the kidnappings, the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
My God. Then we got a video of America's Most Wanted breaking up after James Storm busted a bottle on Chris Harris's eye, which required an eye patch because he now only had 35% of his vision.
Oh, no.
They sat down and they discussed what is a believable amount of vision that he could still have in his eye. He can't just be blind. He's got to have some vision left. He's got 35% of his vision. The best part of this video was they also needed B-roll to emphasize the blindness. So we got like this camera panning all over the place on an eye chart.
Oh, my.
To emphasize this man being lost. And then the deep voice.
It's an eye for an eye. Wildcat Chris Harris meets former best friend Cowboy James Storm in a blindfold match.
So he would be Daredevil.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Neither of these men displayed the fighting ability of Matt Murdock during this next match. This is one of the legendary matches in TNA history, and I don't know what it says when we talk about all the great matches TNA has had that... Like, the X Division match that kicked off the show, I guarantee you, no one has thought about that match since it happened on April 15th, 2007. Mm. But matches like this, they are referenced many a time by TNA fans. The infamous blindfold match of 2007, the breakup of America's Most Wanted, which is probably the show where the creator of this match should be placed. This got the Worst Match of the Year award in the Observer that year.
Wow.
Watching it back way, it might have been worse than I recalled. This was hideously bad.
Maybe it was because I was so set up for it being terrible, but I didn't think it was that awful.
TNA is not sure if it's wise for Chris Harris to go into this match in the condition he is currently in, which is probably what someone should have said prior to his ECW debut, where he showed up with a belly. There was a Fire Russo chant before they even locked up, wearing their hoods. Their very loosely applied hoods, which were essentially bags placed over their head without any thought that they might be doing anything athletic, that these things should be somewhat secure over their heads, which resulted in just amateur hour. The crowd is bored immediately. The two can't find each other. There were chants of "We want wrestling." Harris goes to punch Storm, and the hood falls off mid-punch. Then the crowd started chanting boring. Tanay notes that it's a tough position to be put into this match. Storm just takes his hood off, and then immediately it's placed back on, and he goes into zombie mode as soon as the hood is placed back on. Harris goes for a stunner to Storm off the second turnbuckle. No reaction to this. Harris then spears him off the top. Again, the hood falls off of Storm. It barely stays on Harris's face. Harris leans over for a back body drop, and in leaning over, his hood falls off. Harris then places Rudy Charles in the sharpshooter, which might have been the high point of the entire match. Storm then just blatantly takes his hood off as the referee is distracted and super kicks Harris to painfully end this match and pins Storm. Storm gets the pin at 9 minutes and 52 seconds. James Storm could not hide how pissed off he looked after this match. I will assume to try and sell the loss, but I think we can all see that he was much more upset about the last 9 minutes and 52 seconds of his professional career. I thought this was horrible.
Has there ever been a good blindfold match or anything even resembling near good?
Liz, as a kid, the first time I saw Jake Roberts and Rick Martel at WrestleMania 7, I was entertained by that match. Mm-hmm. You go back and watch now, it probably sucks. But that crowd was so into it. The crowd couldn't give a shit about this match.
Well, but I think
it's a horrible stip.
But I think that's part of the problem, too, going into a match like this. With TNA, you set up the expectation for high-level wrestling. I mean, you have all these X-Division matches that preceded this. And then all of a sudden to go to a match that's very old-school, that's a very slow, much more slower pace, and a much more subtle type of match. This crowd really shit on it even before they really gave it a chance, I thought. I mean, obviously there are problems with the match itself, but I feel like it's possible to have a good blindfold match, maybe just not in front of a crowd like this.
Yeah, again, this is, you know, who is your audience? That to me was the biggest question that TNA had a hard time answering throughout these years from, I would say, 2006 onwards, and this was a perfect example of it, a match gone wrong. And really, this was kind of it for Chris Harris. I mean, they were. This was not a guy that was a washout by any stretch in TNA. He was pretty well regarded during his time with James Storm. They were a very good tag team. There was talk of him elevating himself into a singles performer, but then he'd leave TNA, had that terrible, I won't even call it a run, as Braden Walker, and then would come back for a cup of coffee with TNA, but largely fell out after that point in time, and is just kind of a footnote that's remembered for a fake Hall of Fame video.
What's his line?
I'm Braden Walker, and I'm going to knock your lights out. Something like that?
No, it's not that good.
What is it?
It was something else.
We'll find it. Braden Walker, ECW promo. I mean, this thing has really lived on in infamy.
I'm Braden Walker, and I'm going to knock your brains out.
Oh, knock your brains out. I'm sorry. Lights out was too eloquent for the man.
Tiffany, that was a great match there. Two of ECW's finest superstars.
I know, very impressive. You know, Tiffany, I actually have an idea for next
week. What's that, Tiffany? Armando. The door is there for a reason. That means you need to knock before coming up in here. Now, what can I do for you?
Teddy, I apologize, but I want my job back. And every week, you make me jump through hoops. I mean, who's it going to be next? Who am I going to face next, Teddy? Godzilla? King Kong? Just give me another opportunity to get my job back. I want my contract.
It's natural dialogue.
Hey, Teddy. Want to see me?
Tell you what, Armando. I'll give you another opportunity. Tonight, you're going to go one-on-one with ECW's newest superstar.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Braden Walker. And I'm going to knock your brains out.
God.
Oh, my God. Fuck. Every time we mention Chris Harris or Braden Walker on the show, we'll have to play that clip because it's funny every single time.
It's like you finally are debuting in the WWE, and you get your promo, and that's your dialogue. I don't know if anyone could have pulled that off.
But Braden Walker didn't. I don't think Paul Heyman could have pulled that off.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Knock, knock. Your opening line, your introduction is a knock-knock joke. God. Well, the answer was no one was there. We go back to Letitia. That was one thing here. Again, any match had ended, it was like, boom, race to, like, just throw to the back.
No,
like,
no.
It was, like, so formulaic. Like, it was just a fucking race to cut to the back.
No breathing room at all. No breathing room. It's like you know, like you're with a girl and you just say, oh, bye, see ya. No cuddling time.
There was no cuddling in TNA.
None.
Letitia's with Kurt and Sting, sporting a Nike shirt. Sting says that Jarrett has changed, or sorry, Kurt says that Jarrett has changed for the better, and they need to be a team tonight, all of them. They both saw something in Jarrett's face after a match he had last October, and he better not screw him. Sting walks off, and Angle just stands there, and then he just says, "This job sucks." Give it a few years. There's a video for the next match. The Wrath of X match. What is a Wrath of X match? This felt like a normal cage match.
There's no special stipulation attached to this.
This is the Wrath of X. Jerry Lynn against Christopher Daniels and his face tattoo. Did you do any digging into what this tattoo meant, what it symbolized? Because we never found out at the time.
I didn't, but the announcers are trying to put over this new incarnation of the Fallen Angel character, where it's essentially, you know, his heel turn, like this new edge given to Christopher Daniels.
They got pretty wonky here with their production. We got this upside down jib shot that nearly caused me to throw up when they cut from this video. So you go to the arena and it's upside down, like you're on a goddamn roller coaster, and then it flipped over and zoomed into the entrance.
That was kind of cool.
Oh my goodness. I got motion sickness. Daniels drapes his neck onto the rope and gets the Lynn's neck onto the rope and gets the advantage. Lynn got a two count off a victory roll, then hit a tilt-a-whirl head scissors. Lynn then gets sent into the cage, and Daniels chokes him with a camera cord and hits the best moonsault ever for a two count. Lynn comes back with a sunset flip powerbomb out of the corner. Crowd was not into this match. I think the blindfold match had, figuratively placed blindfolds on this crowd. Daniels is then signaling to the skies, where Don West notes that he is signaling to, quote, whatever god he prays to. And West says that these two, they should be friends based on how talented both of them are. But unfortunately, their talent is not enough to overcome their, I guess, religious differences. Crowd then pops when there's a mic check from the top delivered by Daniels for a two count. They start chanting, "This is awesome." There was a kryptonite crunch by Lynn for a two count. And then they climb to the top turnbuckle. Daniels goes for the angel's wings, but Lynn stops him, tries for a cradle pile driver, but Lynn gets crotched on the top, and Daniels hits the last rights for the win at 13 minutes, 22 seconds.
Mm-hmm. You know, I thought a really good match, really strong match from both these men. They're both so talented, and Jerry Lynn, you know, I don't know how old he was here. How old was Jerry Lynn at this point?
Oh, boy.
Is he still wrestling?
No,
he's retired
at this point. I would say in 2007, probably, I'm guessing around 44 he would have been at that point.
Even I'm sure if he came out of retirement today, like, he'd still be excellent.
He's 51 today.
He's just excellent. But very strong match in the ring, but the storyline I just don't think really connected. They were, again, trying to sell Christopher Daniels as this new more maniacal character, and how he exemplified that was, he took a cord from the cameraman. He's using a cord. The old Christopher Daniels wouldn't have done that. You know, I just feel like there was always a bit of a disconnect between whatever this Fallen Angel thing was and Christopher Daniels in ring, where he just seemed a lot more like a straightforward pro wrestler. You know, not this kind of a mystical Undertaker type of thing that the Fallen Angel thing was supposed to be.
Jeremy Borash is with Team 3D for a memorable interview, the first of which was the visual of these two holding their replica titles, a replica version of the WWE, WCW, and ECW tag titles.
Do we know they're replicas?
Well, they weren't the legitimate titles.
Are there even legitimate titles? Do they not get new titles every time?
I don't know how they could legally even show these on television. I mean, they've
done this a lot. I mean, well, how does the Lunder Blaze show the WWF title?
Well, there was a lawsuit that came out of that, which established this as intellectual property that you can't degrade on your competition's television.
There's actually even an instance where they had Rhino throw the ECW title out on TNA.
That's right. That's right. Where I recall at the time Rhino coming on our show right as this angle was on. And it was the night of One Night Stand in 2005 where TNA was doing the angle where he brought the title and was going to burn it. Mm-hmm. So we have him on that night and we're talking about what's going on in TNA, and we asked him about, you know, this idea that WWE is bringing back ECW and, you know, how it's led to this storyline on television and TNA. And I got a call the next day from TNA who were just livid. Why are you talking about ECW when one of our TNA talents is on the show? I'm like, are you kidding me? The guy that's doing an ECW storyline on your television and why we're talking about ECW? The reason he's talking about ECW is because... anyway.
Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
Welcome.
Watch your own TV show.
Welcome to my world, folks. Borash interviews them, and Bubba says how he's sick of hearing his own voice and continuing to talk about winning the tag titles and falling short of beating the current champions, LAX. They never get it done.
The United States puts electrified fences up to keep people like you out. Well, tonight, that electrified cage is up to keep you people in.
He says how the United States puts up electrified fences to keep people like you out. But tonight, the electrified fence will be used to keep you in and complete their legacy and take their seat next to the great tag teams of all time. And in the words of their friends Terry and Dory Funk Jr., Funk you.
Mm. What was that? Why the references to Terry and Dory?
I think just, you know, that they were chasing history here and want to be thought of as one of the top tag teams of all time, and the Funks qualify as that. But
okay.
These are your baby faces, folks.
Yep. Keep you people out.
Fry those immigrants that try to get into our country illegally.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a match.
I mean, of the two storylines you have going on here, really the strongest one is Team 3D going for the NWA titles, which is the, I guess, only, the largest titles that they've had yet to win at that point. I mean, I like that. I like even them coming out with the WWE titles to exemplify that. It kind of got lost, though, in the context of this match.
Well, you did have to have some race relations. I mean, you can't just be chasing tag titles. we got the greatest video of all time setting up 10,000 volts of violence with these hokey sound effects, which I wrote were hokey before I actually saw the match, and these were goddamn legitimate in comparison. This featured an angle that one day way we have to go back and talk about, involving Brother Runt, the former Spike Dudley, being tased by Conan on television, with the implication that he was carrying a gun and was going to shoot Spike. This way was the culmination of this LAX Team 3D feud, which had featured such great matches as the Ghetto Brawl and the Little Italy Street Fight.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where Italy kind of intersected here. I guess that's the Italian chapter of the Dudley family legacy.
Yeah, right.
Massimo Dudley.
Hmm.
Vincenzo Dudley. The Italians. Anyway, they had a little Italian street fight. Then Letitia, very busy woman on this night, was with LAX and Conan, where Conan had no fucks to give at this point in time in his TNA tenure.
Let me tell you one thing. You guys are washed up. We're what's on and popping. The Border Toss, the Gringo Killer, the Cracker Jack. What do you guys got? D-Gun, get the table. It's like a broken record. I don't know what's worse, watching one of your matches or listening to a Christy Hemme promo.
Just calls the Dudleys washed up, mocks all of their old catchphrases and spots. Says he doesn't know what's worse, going back and watching old matches of Team 3D or a Christy Hemme promo. Then goes on to call them fat pigs, compares them to a wildebeest, and they're going to be chopping meat tonight. This guy's delivery was awesome, but there's something to be said by just like running down your opponents to such a degree that you ask the question, well, what if you lose to these? Like, there's an idea of propping up your opponents while also cutting a good promo. And this guy just seemed to be out there to just bury the fuck out of these guys. They're fat. They're out of shape. They're very dated. Their gimmick is stale.
Right.
Their matches suck. Like, okay, I'm really excited to watch now a match involving their spots and their gimmick in an overly gimmick match.
Right.
But in terms of that LAX package at the time, mm-hmm. I mean, Conan was tremendous.
Yeah.
He was a great talker, and you really felt it when he left this group because his promos were tremendous at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very solid. So Mike Tenay promotes the fact that there have been 16 NWA singles title changes in St. Louis, but never have the NWA tag titles changed hands in St. Louis. And then we have the cage get electrified, which involved like like those giant fire hoses. Like one of those got plugged into the side so that the voltage could, I guess, surround the cage.
It's just so weird how, like, you know, you have Team 3D chasing the NWA titles, and so they're trying to make history. You have such a historical implication to this match, yet you're placing it in the context of something so ridiculous. We're going to plug this. And how do they exemplify that? We plug this giant thing into the cage, and then the lights will blink in the arena a couple times. That's how you know.
Tenay announces that we are going to shock the world, and Borash in the ring commands them to electrify the steel cage.
Oh,
words you need to hear as a wrestling fan.
So, I mean, if you haven't seen this match,
please go out of your way to see
it. Go try to see it if you're sadistic. But essentially, they're fighting inside a giant bug zapper. Like one of those bug-killing things.
Yeah, yeah. This was their answer to Guantanamo Bay.
But basically, the wrestlers here have to pretend that they can't touch the fence. And if they do, they have to pretend that they're electrocuted. Like children. Pretend that they're getting shocked.
Yeah. The lights also went out in the arena, so this looked like house show footage. Especially when they would show any crowd shots.
Well, they got to save energy here. There's all this power being...
All the voltage had to be all concentrated into one portion of the arena, that being the ring. God bless Mike Tenay and Don West, who tried to break down the strategy of Hernandez and his rubber boots and the soles of the boots that would prevent his feet from getting electrocuted when he would blatantly stand on this fucking electrified cage.
I think that, you know, like something like this is always part of the abilities or like, you know, the what's asked of a commentator is to try to make up for the weaknesses and storylines and in what you see in the ring.
Oh, and there were many.
This was just too much. Like come on. I'd love to watch this match with an electrician. And, like, ask him, oh, yeah, these rubber boots and these baseball gloves, they'll keep you safe, right? I'm climbing this cage.
Can you imagine if there was, like, one instance of, like, some kid watching this that decided to try this on, like, a friggin' electrical line outside of his house?
I feel very sorry for that kid, and I blame the parents, but...
The announcers are literally so explaining that that's how he will not get shocked.
Yeah, batting gloves.
All of a sudden, Devon's bleeding 4 minutes into this match. No reaction to the blood or the match for that
you
matter.
You can't even see it because it's
you
so
couldn't
dark.
Even see it because of the lighting. Hernandez was also bleeding here. The cage has done nothing, even when Homicide's hand connects with the cage.
No.
And they've got to, like, cover for it.
Yeah, it does nothing. And also, there are multiple times where they would go over the ropes, right in between the cage and the ropes, to get to the top rope. To climb the top turnbuckle. If this thing was fucking electrified, would anybody realistically go up to the top?
Like, I got
way?
The impression that there were many more jolts for effect, and there was, like, a malfunction. Because this gimmick, it, like, they did nothing with this. Like, there were two really cheesy instances.
Yeah.
And the first, like, 8 minutes of the match are just nothing.
Well,
it's a standard match are sitting on their hands.
The idea is to just tease. And these teasers were so bad because, like, they'd be in the corner and one man would be trying to hold Bully Ray's hand to try to touch the fence. It looked really weak.
Conan comes down in his wheelchair, and then Hector Guerrero attacks him, and just looks terrible in the dark here. Guerrero takes the keys to the steel cage, opens up the cage door, and he's instructed to get the tables for Bubba and Devon. And then Hector slams the cage door onto Hernandez's head. In 1982, that turned around the world-class territory and set it on fire. In 2007, it was a near fall. And then Hernandez lifted Devon for a border toss. He sent him into the electrified cage, and what resulted was the greatest spot in wrestling history.
He's got him up high! Gonna be the border toss!
Can he do it to brother Devon?
And he throws it right in, and he just felt the electricity zap him.
He sent him airborne, and you saw that, the alternating current from the electrified cage as he made contact, as his back went right into the cage.
Devon was apparently fried. The crowd, like, you could tell this entire arena, they heard these sound effects, they saw the lights flicker in the arena, and they had all of about 4 seconds to decide what is our judgment on this shit we've just seen. And the crowd, in unison, just started booing, and then the booing turned to chants of bullshit, which naturally segued to Fire Russo. And this match was just, it fell off the cliff we were talking about earlier. If it was ever on a cliff to begin with.
Yeah. Oh, it'd fall way further.
Like, what are you thinking, Wei, when you watch the...
well, I mean,
like,
I...
one of the most ill-conceived gimmick matches, and that is saying a lot for a promotion that produced and delivered the Fish Market Street Fight.
Yeah. I think there are always ways to, you know, tease things like
electrocution.
This. Electrocution, whatever. Like going over the top rope, you know, things that you're trying to avoid in wrestling. But I would expect even a company like TNA at this time with limited budget to make something like this a little bit more convincing. You know, you have adults watching this show. Who do you think you're going to fool? Like, I mean, I've seen Japanese death matches where they actually use electricity, and not saying go that far, but if you can make it look that realistic, or, I mean, somewhere close to that, then why even attempt something like this? This is ridiculous.
They hit the doomsday device to Homicide for a 2 count. Hernandez then puts his gloves on to climb to the top of the cage, to the top of the electrified cage, as Devon is placed on a table in the ring, and Hernandez dives off the top of the cage at such an awkward angle. Wes is explaining the rubber boots preventing him from being electrocuted and the rubber soles of his boots. Hernandez was lucky he didn't shatter his leg upon landing here, because he basically broke this fall with his feet, falling almost straight down onto Devon onto this table. Was such an awkward splash from such a gigantic human individual.
Well, have you ever tried to concentrate trying to climb an electric fence?
How this man didn't die from the electrified fence or the splash off the top, I do not know. But that took Devon out of the match, and as well, Hernandez. Homicide is then sent into the cage. They tried to catch him falling off the electrocuted fence, but nearly dropped him. They quickly recover, hit the 3D, got this match over with. And Tanay notes this huge moment. And as they are celebrating with the tag titles, Tanay says, "Quickly, let's go to JB in the back with Kurt Angle." Because we got to get in our 18th interview with Kurt Angle tonight.
From the bell, the end bell.
It had to have been 10 seconds.
Not even. No time for a replay. No time to digest what was supposed to be a very monumental moment in the history of tag team wrestling. Team 3D, oh, these people, they won ECW, they won the WWF titles, they won the fake WCW titles, and now they finally win the NWA championship. And on to the next segment. Like, there's nothing. I know they probably had a lot, you know, coming up on the show, a lot they wanted to cram in, but, you know, for all the build up to this moment, there's no effect to it.
If they had produced a DVD on TNA the year 2007, it would have been entitled "Quickly, Let's Go to JB in the Back with Kurt Angle." It would perfectly describe the year of TNA. So we go to Kurt Angle, who gets upset at Borash, saying the rumor is that he got Jeff Jarrett onto his team out of desperation. He says he doesn't like his integrity to be questioned. His job as captain was to put the best team together, and Kurt Angle trusts Jeff Jarrett and says it would be bad for Jarrett if he screwed him. Another video for Lethal Lockdown, which included Jim Mitchell bringing out the mother of Abyss to keep him on their team. More screaming from Joe to communicate with his teammates. And then we go to our main event, Team Cage and Team Angle in a Lethal Lockdown match. And out comes Harley Race, the keeper of the cage, to hold the key to the door.
Didn't do a very good job.
Well, at least they made him the keeper of the key for this and not the electrified fence match. Mm. Harley got a good reaction, though, coming out from the Missouri crowd. So this is your Lethal Lockdown / War Games match. We started off with AJ Styles and Kurt Angle, Angle coming out in a Cardinals jersey. So it would be Styles and Angle to start off for 5 minutes, and an entrance would come every 2 minutes, and then the ceiling would lower, and it would turn into your big brawl. So they went through. Abyss was out third, hit the shock treatment to Angle. Then in the order of entry, Rhino was out next, followed by Tomko, followed by Joe. Joe would come in and fire up on Abyss and Tomko and then catch Styles with a Uranagi out of the corner and hit a muscle buster to him. And then Angle hit five consecutive Germans to Tomko. Scott Steiner was out number seven. He came out and immediately hits belly-to-belly suplexes to Angle and Joe. And then he places Rhino onto the top rope and delivers a fucking Frankensteiner.
A what?
It's a Frankensteiner way. And gets maybe the best baby face reaction of the entire show, regardless of the fact he was one of the top heels on the show. But nonetheless, Scott Steiner delivering a Frankensteiner.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight was Sting. Number nine was Christian Cage. Number 10 was Jeff Jarrett. And this then leads to the ceiling being lowered with pyro attached. And Jarrett is passing weapons to his teammates. Tons of garbage can shots by Jarrett to Steiner. Angle takes a bat away from Styles and gives him the finger. Goes for a German, then Styles low blows Styles. And then Angle and Styles would proceed to climb to the top of the cage onto the ceiling where they would remain. Then Abyss grabs thumbtacks from Jim Mitchell. Harley Race comes over and decks Jim Mitchell, who sells it big. Joe then tries to unhinge a guitar from the ceiling. It falls down. Rhino then gores Tomko through the steel cage door to the floor. Through the door to the floor.
Where was Harley?
He was going to get more. I was trying to think of a word that rhymed. Then there was a chair shot to the head of Kurt Angle and his damaged neck by Styles on the roof. Joe then hits a tope suicida to Tomko on the floor. Steiner hits a belt shot, just tons of plunder. Sting and Jarrett then double chokeslam Christian onto the thumbtacks. So much happening here. Angle then decks Styles, and he flips off the top of the cage to Tomko and Rhino on the fucking floor. Right off the top of this cage.
Yeah.
I thought someone was going to die here.
That sounds... I mean, it was a very impressive spot, but I think watching it, you couldn't really appreciate it. I mean, realistically, that was like a Mick Foley-level bump he took, you know, that type of dive. But the way the cameras captured it, it just... And the way it happened amidst all this, within the span of like 2 minutes, all these giant spots happening, it just, you forget about it right afterwards.
I don't think anyone has ever thought of this bump AJ has taken since this time. Mm-hmm. Like, you can say that about so much of it, whether it was a great match, a great spot. I mean, those moments are something TNA has just, they've not ingrained in people's memory, where something like this should be remembered for years, something so spectacular. And it was a transition and probably not even the biggest part of the match that people remember. We just went right to the next thing, which was Abyss putting tacks inside of a guitar. Then it's Jarrett grabs the guitar from Abyss, and Jarrett teases that he's going to clock Sting with the guitar, but instead he nails Abyss with the tack-filled guitar, which apparently it gives like the guitar a plus 10. And now Abyss is laid out and Jarrett is allowing Sting to take the pinfall so that Sting can get the title match, and therefore Sting should be able to trust Jeff Jarrett. And Sting pins Abyss at 28 minutes and 4 seconds. Sting is skeptical of Jarrett. He wants to shake hands. He reluctantly does. Then Joe, who just half an hour ago was going to maim and kill this man, also shook hands with Jarrett. And then Jarrett and Angle walk to the back together. Like, always just these layers upon layers upon layers of dialogue, of storyline, and it was just... My God, I felt like I was cramming for an exam when we were about to sit down and do this review. If I can, like, God damn, if I could tell you what happened on this show without notes.
There's way too much. And I think the format of the match didn't really lend itself, you know, to whatever storylines they had going on either. I mean, it really felt like for a large portion of this match, when it was just a one-on-one or two-on-one, there wasn't much tension in the handicap advantages, and it just seemed like a whole lot of nothing. And I know that's how this match is designed. You don't get the weapons until everybody's in the ring. But, I mean, Jesus, once the weapons did come, it just felt like, the whole thing felt like a blur. There are a lot of, like, good-looking spots. I mean, that gore through the cage looked awesome. I'm sure AJ's dive looked awesome if there was a wide enough camera shot to cover it. A lot of things looked really good, with thumbtack spots even, but everything just happened so quick that you have no time to digest it, nor is any of it memorable afterwards.
And that, to me, was the biggest thing. Like, I know it's the thing that, you know, you always point at the Vince Russo style. It's like...
But that's not even, this is not even necessarily a Russo problem. Like the fact that this match is so overbooked towards the end.
It's the way TNA was, and it's like, I watch a show like this where these guys kill themselves. Christian taking tacks was completely forgotten a minute later. Mm-hmm. And you had these guys that were going out there killing themselves, stars in the prime of their careers, and it was nothing that took them to another level. It was nothing that was standing out that, hey, I'm going to dive off the top of a cage because there's this reward at the end. It's going to take my career to another level. It's going to make this a memorable pay-per-view. It's going to increase our business. There's a reason for it, and there never felt like there was. And whether you loved Vince Russo, hated Vince Russo, liked this creative team, didn't like this creative team, there was a certain point where it's like, okay, this is just not working. And I watched today's Impact. My God, is it a better program than it was in 2007. My biggest takeaway from this.
In what ways?
I think it's so much more simplified today. Like, I can watch Impact. I am not overwhelmed. I would watch Impact. And at this time, 2007, let's not forget, it was a one-hour show. Right. And there was a lot that they were putting in. Like, just watch these video packages and try to tell me what was happening in some of these. Like, we didn't even get into the whole Abyss storyline with his mother. That was a subplot to this show about if AJ... Like, there was just so much to keep track of. And not watching the TV, going back and watching this, it was even more problematic.
You know, I'll say, I mean, I was completely... a lot of the wrestling was great. I think the talent roster...
A for effort, man.
The roster was really, really strong at this time, looking at this card. I thought a lot of the in-ring was very strong, but, I mean, none of the storylines, I can say, really clicked at all for me. You had two really stupid gimmick matches in the blindfold match and the electrified. Like, I mean, just insulting.
In fairness, they outdid themselves. After that blindfold match, it wouldn't be easy You watch that match, and then you tell people, that's not even the worst match
on this
show.
The fence match is way worse. You know, whatever. Overall, solid wrestling. Not a match I can recommend anybody going back to watch, though.
Oh, I recommend going back and watching both.
Except for those two matches for all the wrong reasons.
I give this show a 3 out of 10. You know, great wrestling is great wrestling, but to me, this was just... if you ever watched the Cosby Show, and they gave this analogy of... a steak dinner, but you presented the steak dinner to me on a trash can. It wasn't the meal, it was the presentation.
Right, sure. I give it a 5.
All right. Let's go to your feedback. Some of you braved this pay-per-view, including Matt from suburban Detroit. First, I want to apologize for Way for requesting this pay-per-view. I hope it wasn't as painful as your final review and impacts were. Did you get through this one okay?
I got through it fine. No worries.
On to the show. I really felt... I really felt like you could plug the show into any era that Russo booked, and it was a definite letdown after the Scott D'Amore era. The good, Devon selling the electrified cage, the X Division style, Professor Scott Steiner delivering a Frankensteiner, the concept pay-per-view that works, and Don West's heart attack style commentary. The bad, the noise piped in from the electrified cage, the Russo-inspired gimmicks, Kaz's head through the cage, and the blindfold match. Kazarian wasn't even on this show.
I don't remember that part.
And the weird. Well, I don't have that much time, but VKM, Serotonin, Bob Backlund, Kevin Nash, etc., etc. Overall, I give the 7 Braden Walkers joining the Revolution out of 10.
Jack from Orlando.
Boy, he says, this show was so weird to go back and watch. From JB's hair to James Mitchell's seemingly cocaine-induced rant, to Conan comparing Team 3D to wildebeests, these were some of the strangest backstage segments I've ever seen. It's hard to pinpoint when exactly TNA took a turn for the worse, but this show is as good a start as any. For every silver lining that was the X Division or the surprisingly over Eric Young Robert Roode storyline, there was a god-awful Russo stipulation match. The horrendous blindfold match speaks for itself, but I want to talk about that electrified cage. I am no electrician, but according to my research, depending on the current, a person can be killed with as low as 9 volts.
Ooh.
This cage was supposedly 10,000. My suspension of disbelief in wrestling only goes so far. And why bleed, Devon? No one in the crowd can see it. I was always a fan of TNA, and the main event was so good, so I give the show a 5 out of 10. Hard to believe that less than a decade later, 70% of the roster is gone, and TNA hasn't bounced back.
All right, we go to the next bit of feedback from Johnny B. from Brisbane, Australia. I enjoyed the show. The opener was great. The 2-on-1 scenario at the end between the Motor City Machine Guns and Lethal was well worked. Rude and Williams felt laborious. Rude needs a haircut. EY looks like he's aged more than 7 years suggest. The finish of the women's match was good. Senshi and Austin Starr was good too. Love seeing Starr getting up into Buckland's face and demonstrating how... Buckland's face... Bob Backlund, demonstrating how fast he should be counting. Seeing how many times the blindfolds came off without being worked into the match, I'm guessing botchfest. Terrible. I couldn't get into the Daniels match. These two are TNA originals. Was I missing something, or was this ordinary? LAX and 3D was a mess. The talent was hamstrung by restrictive stipulation. This had Russo's fingerprints all over it. Great match to the finish. Massive star power. Crazy fall off the top from AJ Styles. Didn't get the ending with Sting being gifted the win, but this happened in 2007, so who cares? I guess Jeff is just a stand-up guy.
Okay, we got Luke from South Wales, who actually owns this on DVD, and he explains that the pre-show match featured VKM taking on Serotonin.
Okay.
Which Kaz was a part
of. There you go.
And he also talks about how there's a TNA fan fest.
That's right, they mentioned that on the show.
Package on the DVD, and he gives us some highlights, including Andy, the camera guy, surprising Don West at his autograph table when he isn't looking. Hector Guerrero sits beside him and bluntly says, "Don't speak to me." Okay, I don't think these are that good.
All right, we don't. The details are not that engaging. From Mario in Mexico City. TNA programming wasn't available in legal ways in Mexico until 2007 when they decided to make a tour to Mexico in December. So they used regional networks and a cable network called TVC to promote an event with old tapings. I was excited to go to the old Torreo de Cuatro Caminos in December and even bought ringside tickets, but they canceled that show due to low ticket sales. Back to lockdown, it's sad to see that all the young talent was wasted in matches that TNA booking presented as the undercard. Aries, in that stupid gimmick, Lethal, Sabin, Shelley, and even Daniels seemed to be less than all the WCW WWE veterans. The blindfold match was just painful to watch. The Lethal lockdown was good. My favorite spot was the gore through the cage for Tomko. It looked nasty. 7 stars of Austin out of 10.
Okay, we go to Ryan finally from Calgary. This was not a great show. This is the first TNA show, pay-per-view, or TV that I ever saw from start to finish. It's nice that it's up on YouTube, although I was already canceling my 14-day trial while Angle and Jarrett were walking up the ramp. I can't imagine there's anything else I need to see in the next 2 weeks, and I would feel pretty dumb if I gave them $4.99 if I forgot to cancel later. Briefly,
X title match was a bit of a clusterfuck and left no impression after the bell. I was hoping for a lot more from Daniels and Lynn. Lynn seemed sloppy and Daniels seemed slow. The electrified cage match was a stupid idea with stupid lights that made it hard to see. Tanay trying to cover for Hernandez touching the electrified portion right before his top of the cage spot didn't help. The overbooked finale was the best match on the card. I don't think Scott Steiner has looked that good since the 90s, and all he really did was not F up. Some good candidates for the Putski Award, Steiner, Tonko, Angle. I give it to Steiner. Okay.
Okay. Here's the definitive answer. Can a human hold a 10,000-volt wire? The answer is no. With an alternating current potentially that high and a body resistance to that voltage so low, the voltage will rip straight through the body, cooking a path as it goes. Where the voltage exits the body, there will be third-degree burns. The following is a list of amperages the body can take before death. Less than 1/2 milliamp. No, okay. The answer is no.
Well, thank
the long
you.
And short of it.
Yeah.
From answers.com.
Oh, so that match is not realistic?
It wasn't a realistic match, yeah. Nor a proper depiction of that voltage to the human body. Okay, that's going to wrap things up for this week. Now, we're going to have a special bonus show this week, Wei. Are you aware of this?
Did not know. You're surprising me with all this stuff. What's going on?
On Thursday morning, rather than throwing up a snippet, we are going to put up the April 15th, 2007 edition of Live Audio Wrestling on Thursday morning for people to go back and relive.
Wow, really?
For instant reaction. What were people saying about lockdown the night of the show?
Wow, okay.
When all the future angles coming out of lockdown were at the forefront, maybe some people thought that this was the most revolutionary electrified cage match in history. Maybe it was going to change the world forever. Maybe we all had blindfolds on to where TNA was going to be going in 2007. So we will go back and post that on Thursday morning at liveaudiowrestling.com.
So don't be alarmed if all of a sudden you see a show from 2007 appear on
yes,
your feeds.
It will be a classic edition of The Law. Call screened by none other than Wei Ting.
I guess. I have no recollection.
Well, you can go back and and you can hear this show for the first time.
Sure. Nice.
All right. But next week, Wei, we are going to return to the WWE Network, and what are we going to review?
This is also going back to the request thread, which you can find at lawradio.proboards.com, and we will be reviewing the very first season of Tough Enough. Yes, Tough Enough.
Not the entire season.
Not the whole season. A couple episodes.
Okay.
Episodes what? One
and two?
One and two.
All right.
Is that good enough?
That's good.
Okay. Episodes 1 and 2 of the first season of Tough Enough. This is, of course, the season that features Maven.
What about me? What about Maven?
Yep. And a very young Josh Matthews.
A young Josh Matthews, a young Christopher Nowinski.
Oh, right.
And perhaps the high point of Al Snow as a character on Tough Enough, where that was really his... What most people look at as one of the high points of Al Snow's career was his role as the... As the coach, the trainer on Tough Enough.
I mean, I'm even trying to think of pro wrestling reality TV. This might have been certainly the most notable, but was it like the first pro wrestling reality TV show?
I mean, MTV had done one-off specials, but in terms of a series, it was certainly the first one that the WWE had done. And, of course, Taz was one of the trainers that year, and for all we know, he could be maybe back for the new season that they announced this past week.
So the first season of Tough Enough, episodes 1 and 2, reveal away next week.
All right, so that's coming up next week. Two episodes coming at you of Tough Enough. You can always listen to all of our shows at liveaudiowrestling.com. Review a Raw, it goes up every Monday night, and you can catch it on Fight Network Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can go subscribe on iTunes, all that great stuff. And Wei, I'm glad the connection held up. I'm going to be seeing you tomorrow when you arrive in Montreal, correct?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it'll be good to see your face again. I haven't seen you since Monday. And maybe the next time you and I do a show together, you'll be more willing to address this scandal that's going on.
What are you talking about? You just tell me. Actually, I'm curious now. This is going to be terrible for people to listen to.
Well, I wish you had better recall, that's all. I think that it's on everyone's mind coming out of Monday. And they wanted a response from you, but way kind of deflecting. You're like a politician. What video? All right. We're going to say goodbye, and we will chat with you later on this week. Catch the Loss Sunday night, 11 Eastern. Steve Corino will be on the program, as well as the kickoff for our ROH contest, where you can have lunch with not just us, but also Red Dragon, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. Our first giveaway will be this Sunday, where you can also win tickets to the New Japan shows they're doing.
What are you guys eating? What's the restaurant?
To be determined.
Okay.
You can't just give up.
What would Red Dragon eat?
Maybe we could
take sushi. Dragon rolls.
Yeah. Yeah, that may be a good idea.
Yeah.
Are you going to come?
If I'm invited.
Of course you're invited.
If we have enough spots. Yeah. Depending on the food, realistically.
Yeah, maybe maybe we'll electrify the restaurant.
You should take Red Dragon to Red Lobster.
Stuff.
You can have the dragon shrimp.
Okay. Goodbye, folks. He's lost his mind.
That would be the best contest.
Red Lobster dragon. With Red Dragon. Oh, my God. We can get the best Photoshop, too.
And he throws it right
quickly to JB with Kurt